B-Pod Studios.
Stay with us and we're going to show you how to take dead aim.
Take dead aim.
The importance of taking dead aim.
Welcome to Taking Dead Aim, a show dedicated to the game of golf and the people who play it in the Carolinas and around the world. Taking Dead Aim is a presentation of RBC Wealth Management and Academy Sports and Outdoors. And now, here's your host, the guy who will grant you a mulligan, but then remind you about it the whole ride home. Ask me how I know. Charlie Nance.
Hey there, welcome back once again. We're Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter at CLT underscore golf guy. This year's final major championship in men's professional golf certainly lived up to any and all hype, did it not? For the first time in nearly 70 years, the sport's oldest championship returned to the island of Ireland, specifically Northern Ireland, and the breathtaking Royal Portrush. I mean, my gosh, watching that place on TV, is there anyone who's not dying to peg it up there right now? And then for the eventual champion to be an Irishman, Hollywood wouldn't even write that. We'll put a big bow on the 148th Open Championship with Ron Green Jr. of the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer and Taylor Zarzer, who anchored coverage on Sirius XM and PGA Tour Radio from Royal Portrush last week. Also, we'll check in with one of my favorite people in the game. Fresh off his man Austin Cook's fourth place finish last week in Kentucky, we will hear from the one and only Kip Henley. But we begin with Ron Green Jr. of the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, who was on the beat last week in Northern Ireland. Well, Ron, let's start with this. The Masters is held at Augusta National, and it's special because it's held at Augusta National. When the U.S. Open is held at Pebble Beach, it's special because it's held at Pebble Beach. When the Open Championship is at St. Andrews, it's special because it's at St. Andrews. And I don't know if it was because the Open Championship hadn't returned to Ireland or Northern Ireland in almost seven decades. I don't know if it was because an Irishman won it. I don't know if it was because the crowds were so enthusiastic and overwhelming. I don't know if I was just blown away by the course or what, but I got the feeling that an Open Championship conducted at Royal Portrush is special because Royal Portrush is special.
No doubt. I mean, it had the whole, I don't want to say unique, but special feeling about it from the time it started till through Sunday afternoon into Sunday evening. I mean, it was one of those that stands out for a number of reasons. I mean, I think if most of us had only heard about what the golf course was, then you get to see it, deal with the best players in the world. And I think the golf course itself became a huge international star if it weren't already. I mean, it's among my favorite golf courses I've ever seen or played, and I just think it instantly made itself part of the Open Road after all those years, not being part of it. Now it's there, and the rumor is it's going to be back in 5 years, so we'll see. But that's how good it was.
Well, I would have it on the same level as St. Andrews. I would come back every 5 years. I was blown away at how beautiful, and granted, it hasn't been a dry summer. It's been very wet, so you had the great different shades of green and whatnot, but it was breathtaking on television. I mean, if you're a camera guy with NBC and the Golf Channel, other than Sunday, you had to be in heaven at what you were allowed to present.
Yeah, I mean, it's photogenic. And in fact, one of the cameramen or photographers said it was hard for him to fully capture the whole scene and how big it is, and the dunes are huge, and it's just this handsome, sort of enthralling thing to look at, and you find yourself wandering around and you get pulled out there toward the Irish Sea. And I mean, if you're going to go out there and walk, and obviously thousands and thousands of people did, I mean, it's a big walk. There's a lot of hills and dunes and challenges to getting out there, but I mean, it just felt like it felt like the people who were there, and even if you weren't there, it felt like they sort of wrapped their arms around the place and the event and what it meant. And it just, and then you, on top of all that, you get Shane Lowry, an Irishman, winning that tournament, and it just hit so many right notes, I mean, it was like a Christmas carol almost.
Yeah, before we get to Lowry, one other thing that struck me is golfers will complain on a sunny day if the sun is not high enough in the sky. They will find something to gripe about. Was I just missing it, or was there not a disparaging word uttered by anybody who pegged it up that last week?
I told more than one person that other than maybe Augusta National, I've never heard such unanimous praise for a golf course, especially one set up to be challenging like that one was. It was to a person, despite, you know, no matter what kind of golf they play or, you know, what their preferences in are and how they play, they loved it. It just, you know, again, most guys hadn't seen it, and you get there and, you know, from that moment you stand on that first tee and play a par four that sort of, the tee shot's flat, and then you go up the hill to the green, but there's tight out of bounds on both sides, and then you sort of turn out and start rolling and twisting and going. I mean, it just feels right. It's different than a lot of the classic links courses in that around the greens there's more sort of danger there. I mean, there's more runoffs, not like Pinehurst particularly, but there are places where it could scoot away from you and get down in some hollows and swales and things that maybe you wouldn't get in other places. But and then there was also the fact that if you got it riding on the wind the wrong way, you didn't have to go far to get it into some really, really bad stuff.
Ron Green Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, our guest taking Dead Aim. To me, I can encapsulate the entire Open Championship at Royal Portrush into a story of two men, Northern Irishman Rory McIlroy and Irishman Shane Lowry. The first 2 days were all about Rory. The last two were all about Shane. And in both cases, I came away with a greater respect for both players. I truly was knocked out and floored at the way Rory starting off with the snowman on Thursday. I couldn't believe what my eyes were seeing. I'm sure he couldn't believe it either. But I really was fascinated and taken aback with the gutsy performance on Friday. And he's always been very open and candid in the interview room, but even more so on Friday when the emotions came out, when I think it hit him how much this actually meant to him. I just came away with a greater respect for Rory McIlroy, the person and the man, than I had going into this tournament.
Yeah, I think in those couple of days, it's sort of, you got the full Rory. I mean, there was huge disappointment from the moment it started and the way the ball went out of bounds and he makes the mess on the first hole. And, you know, he almost gets it back. If he could have played the last four holes, even par, shot posted 73 or so on that Thursday. I mean, it totally different story for him going in from there. But, you know, it just, you could, I mean, it was, the disappointment was tangible. I mean, you could feel it in the air, and it just sort of sucked a little bit of the life and the spark out of the place that day. And then he goes up the next day and, you know, lights the place up. And once it got going, and he sort of, it was one of those moments, and it sort of happened again Saturday with Shane Lowry, the way he got going on the closing nine. But you just, the whole place, everybody watching, everybody there sort of got caught up in, is he going to get far enough? Can he push it far enough and pull this thing off? And you thought he was going to do it. And then when it didn't happen, it was, you know, another sort of disappointment. Boy, he was great, just standing right in there. I mean, 5 feet from him as he's sort of spilling his guts, and you can hear his voice catch a couple of times there. And just, you know, to stand up there and to deal with that great disappointment, you know, he goes from heartbreaking to heartwarming. And it just, he's just the best in so many ways. And there's a reason he's so well-liked. And then to take a hard moment, and he won it. And to his credit, that was really special.
What else was really special was the Saturday round by Shane Lowry that you just referenced. It was almost Hollywood-like, a completely clean card at Royal Portrush and a 9-under 63, or 8-under 63, rather. It was stunning. It was some of the best golf I've ever seen played, and it had to be when he was out there. He had to be pinching himself going, is this really happening?
Well, yeah. I mean, he told the story. He said walking off the 17th tee that afternoon, he turned to his caddy and said, this is an incredible day. We may never have another day like it, so let's just soak it all in and enjoy it coming in. And we should. I mean, that was great stuff. You know, you could make the case that, yeah, the conditions softened. I mean, it was like playing golf in your den the last 2 hours out there, which is, you know, leaves the golf course like that defensively.
Right.
But still, I mean, Tommy Fleetwood playing with him, shot 67, I think, and felt like he just got lapped out there. And, I mean, 63, I don't care, you know, that's in a major championship. I don't care if it's soft, hard, whatever. That's spectacular golf. And, I mean, it's when he won the tournament. Now, he obviously had some mental hurdles, you know, emotional challenges to get through carrying that big lead from Saturday into Sunday, knowing what happened at Oakmont and all that. But, I mean, that third round won the Open Championship for him, and then he went and finished it off. And, I mean, it's just – you just – you know, it reaches that point where when he didn't birdie a hole, you kind of looked up more surprised than when he did. I mean, just that was how good he was.
Ron Green Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer is our guest taking dead aim. You've seen some bad weather at the Open Championships. I remember when Tiger won the first two legs of the Grand Slam and then got the rough end of a draw one year out there and shot like an 80 or something in the first round. I remember when Oosthuizen won at St. Andrews, and if you went late early, you got killed by the weather at St. Andrews. How tough was that weather for that stretch of about, I mean, the wind blew all day, but when that rain came in, it was like 45 minutes to an hour, where it looked really bad out there. How bad was it?
Well, I mean, I never gave thought to going out there. I watched them play the first hole or so and then watched the last hole or so. But in between, when all that stuff flew through, I mean, that's just, I mean, Justin Thomas, I think, said, you know, he'd never played anything like that. That was, I mean, it was really ferocious rain. For probably 5 to 10 minutes, the rain just drummed down, and then you throw in the wind, and you knew that was coming, and they've been talking about it for a few days, and it delivered. I mean, it was really, really rugged stuff, and it was the kind of thing that, you know, you just had to try to survive it for a little while, and it was easy. You look at the numbers, it's easy to just let it take you away and look at the scores that players shot. I mean, you know, now J.B. Holmes was an extreme example. I mean, there's a guy who hits the left to right shot, and all the holes seem to set up with the wind taking the ball away from him. And, I mean, that was just a runaway train. But it was, you know, I know there's a beauty to Irish golf, Lynx golf, and the elements and all that stuff. If they didn't have to, there wouldn't have been anybody playing golf in that
Ron Greenjier with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, our guest taking dead aim. One more question about the Open Championship, and it's a question about three different players. We had a couple of issues with players with other players. You usually don't see this that often. Kyle Stanley apparently didn't yell four as a ball was going into the crowd, and, you know, someone else was yelling four. J.B. Holmes in his slow play to the point that Koepka was practically trolling him, or not practically, he was trolling him during that last round. And David Duvall, should he, as our friend Alan Shipnook suggests, just quit competing in this thing? Tackle them one at a time. What do you think?
Well, I mean, this is a lot of the occasional talk. I won't say a lot, but there's the occasional talk about players that they yell for or not. Kyle Stanley defended himself by saying 8 to 10 people had already yelled four, didn't feel like he had to. But I think it's the golfer's responsibility when you see it going that way, yell four. Now, I mean, there are places, that 17th hole, I mean, there are marshals standing in the right side, and I don't even remember if that's where it happened, but during the week, I'd watch them. They couldn't see the ball coming over the hill, and it's just popping all around them. I mean, those guys are way braver or not maybe smart enough to know what they were standing in the line of, because, I mean, there's buck golf balls coming over there, and you just like, you know, good for them for doing it, but, you know, you could hit it in some places where you could take, you know, put some people in danger. You know, but J.B. Holmes, I mean, now Koepka, you know, halfway defended it, J.B., by saying, you know, he wasn't any slower than usual, you know. I mean, they were not behind, despite all the times J.B. hit it. But I'm with Koepka. We see it playing our friends or whatever. It's, you know, you hit your shot, and then it's their turn, and they start getting ready when after you hit, you know, be ready. You know, have your glove on, but J.B. just waits and starts and goes through all things. My gosh, he can take some time to line up a short putt, too. And, you know, it just sort of reinforced, you know, Koepka, that's his way. And he's been outspoken. It's not the first time. He's made his point. The players can say all they want to. Until strokes start adding up, I don't think anything's going to change. And finally, for David Duvall, the same way we were talking about Rory McIlroy earlier, David Duvall came in Thursday afternoon after posting a 91 and making a 14 and stood right there and talked about it and talked about, said all the right things about how if you're going to tee it up, you have a responsibility to sign your card and post your score. And he didn't like what happened, and he was a little embarrassed about that 14 and all that happened, but he did it. And I don't have a problem with him playing. I do think players know when it's time. You know, Tom Lehman got teary-eyed talking about probably his last one. I think when the Open Championship part of it comes with it is you get to keep playing until a certain time. David was adamant that he thought he was hitting it well enough that he could have possibly, if everything went right, be at top 20. Now, I think a lot of us probably think that was a little dreamy there, but given the fact that he only played like three tournaments in a year or something. But, you know, I'm not ready to tell David Duvall he's got to just walk away. I mean, I think he will know. Maybe this will make him rethink it. I don't know. But I think part of what comes with winning one of those is you get to keep playing.
I'm with you. I already loved David Duvall from back when he was a great player, but the way that he conducted himself in the press room, and then more importantly, the way he modeled, as a parent of a golfer, I always look for people who model the right things. And for him to post that score and then show up the next day on the tee box when it would have been very easy for him to WD and play that second round, it said a lot about David Duvall, the man, that I thought was very admirable. Ron Green Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, our guest taking dead aim. Let's put a quick bow on the major championship season, our first quote-unquote condensed major championship season. How do you feel about it having gone through it now?
Well, it was 102 days start to finish from the first day at Augusta till Shane Lowry finished it up. And then that started a gap of, I believe, 263 days until the next one. So I think what I'm going to feel the most is the long absence without a major championship. It's a long time till we get to. We got a football season. We got the holidays. We got winter time. We got the West Coast swing and all that before we get back to Augusta. And normally we would have the PGA coming up, but I think what the schedule intended to do and all that, I liked it. I think it was it did feel compressed. I mean, it took off and went and didn't slow down. But I mean, the players had a month between each major championship. I know Justin Rose complained a little bit about not having enough time. We're talking about that, and like when you really had the same amount of time that you always had. So, but it's forced players to adjust their schedule. And I think Justin Thomas again said it's a work in progress. It's going to take a year or two to figure all this out. I mean, you had players skip the WGC this week in Memphis. I think just because of the schedule. I hope I'm wrong, but I think our friends at Greensboro are going to be probably a little disappointed by what $10 million won't buy them in terms of a field with that Wyndham Rewards. And, I think as this sorts out, I mean, and think of this next year. I mean, it's going to be just like this next year, but one big addition. What would be next week on the calendar would be the Olympic Games. So you throw that, on top of everything else. And then
we'll have a Ryder Cup after that.
Oh, yeah, that too. it's going to, I'll tell you, from about the end of March till end of September, it is just going to churn. But if you like watching golf, that's going to be a rich year.
Get you out of here on this. Brooks Koepka, is there's no argument he's the best player in the world. He won the PGA Championship, although it seemed kind of a forgotten major, even though it went second this year. I was just thinking back on the four majors. Gary Woodland wins at Pebble. It just sort of was there. The two big stories were the way it opened and the way it ended. Which is the better story? Not the bigger story, because just of one name, it's a bigger story, but the better story. Tiger winning the Masters, or an Irishman winning the first time that the Open Championship comes back in nearly seven decades to that island?
Well, Shane Lowry and that whole story was really warm and fuzzy and all those sorts of things. But Tiger winning that Masters, I mean, we just went through a decade. We just put a bow around a decade of major championships. And the one that stands out above all the other ones is Tiger winning Augusta this year, I think. This was not a decade where you had dominant players. In the 2000s, Tiger won, I think, 12 majors. Jack won 8 majors in the 70s. And amazingly, Jack played 40 majors in the decade of the 70s, finished in the top 10 35 times. That's pretty darn good. We didn't have that kind of dominance. You know, Koepka and Rory both won four apiece. But I just think what Tiger did, I mean, that one will glow for years and years to come.
His piece on Rory McIlroy in the Global Golf Post last week is something I commend to you highly. That's Ron Green Jr. And when we return, one of my favorite people in the game, caddy Kip Henley, takes dead aim at his man Austin Cook's season and specifically their fourth place finish in Kentucky last week. Presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
We are Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. Kip Henley is the caddy for Austin Cook on the PGA Tour, and last week they finished fourth in what was a shootout on tour in Kentucky. All right, Kip, before we talk about you and Cookie and specifically Austin's resurgence last week, by the way, congratulations on the top four finish. I had a question as the quote-unquote alternate event on the other side of a major. How much conversation and how much of watching of that major goes on at the alternate event?
There's a lot of conversation goes on. In fact, you know, I know the players. Well, I don't know that the players, but I bet they were. I know the caddies had the TV on the whole time. You showed up in the morning round for your tee times or any time, afternoon, that thing's going the whole time, and the caddies are glued to the tube like crazy. So it's a big topic.
Now, you've caddied over there, and especially on a day like they had on Sunday, you need about 12 arms. How much harder is it to caddy in the Open Championship? Okay, how about this? How much harder is it to caddy the Open Championship on a bad weather day as opposed to caddying on tour on a bad weather day?
Well, the thing about on tour, we prepare every time. You know, we follow the sun, so it's always hot on the tour. And unless you're at Pebble Beach, where it just seems to just rain for nothing, we carry umbrellas and we carry rain suits and we carry extra towels, and thunderstorms blow up and they run us in before. So it's usually useless on the PGA Tour. Pebble, you need a rain suit. It's the only place that the rain suit works. Every time else, you wear a rain suit, you get sweatier in it than if you were standing out in the rain anyway. So you're not going to stay dry. So that's the one thing. The one year, let's see, was it our first? No, it was our second. My first year was in Turnberry over there, and it was miserable. And we got paired with Faldo the first two rounds, and so that added to the misery. The second time I went over there, we went to, it was at St. Andrews. I think it was the one, I think, did Oostase
yes,
on that one.
Yes.
And we had an afternoon time, and we were in, you know, in our bed and breakfast or where we were at the time. And I'm watching the report, and the weather's saying at so-and-so time, it's going to change. The weather's going for bad. And that was the year Mark Calcavecchia played in the morning and shot like 67 and had the early lead. You know, he was an old dude playing and had the early lead. So I'm with Brian Gay, and I'm telling you, it is so beautiful. We warm up the most beautiful day you've ever seen. And he tees off of the rescue on one, and just hits it out there short of the burn or whatever. And as we were walking off the front of that tee, Charlie, it was like God flipped a switch. All of a sudden, instantly, the wind started blowing 25 miles an hour. Instantly. No, it wasn't puffing, and instantly it went to 25 miles an hour. And by the time we got three or four holes into it, man, like Forrest Gump said, it was raining up. I had the umbrella sideways. And in between me and BG, he's crouched down. We're walking across the fairway. I'm looking at him. I go, what in the hell are we doing? Why are we playing golf? And I mean, then the wind quit. I mean, the rain quit. And the wind started picking up like crazy. this is a long story. So he has like on like I don't even, it's heading back towards the clubhouse. I remember this. Brian's got like an 8-footer for par. He marks it, goes through his routine as he's just about to get finish his over the ball. The wind blew it the ball approximately 3 feet.
Wow.
The rules official is sitting there right behind me. I look back at the rules official. BG marks it, puts it down, goes through his routine, and I swear the wind blows it 3 more feet away. I look back at the rules official. He don't do a dang thing. He marks it. He puts it back down. Before he can get close, it blows it another 3 feet, approximately. It has blown his ball 9 or 10 feet further, and they let him hit that putt. And as we walk into the next tee, they blew the siren. And I thought, what? But that is what you can get in that British Open, man. It ain't no fun. And any idiot that says he wants to go to Ireland and pray it rains so he gets the full treatment, he's an idiot. I don't want to play golf with him. I want it to be beautiful when I'm over there. The last time we went, Carnoustie was beautiful. It was the most incredible week ever. So that was last year.
It was nice at Carnoustie. The great Kip Henley is our guest taking dead aim. Do you know Shane Lowry? Do you know his caddy, Bo?
No, I don't really. I've never spoken to either one of them. I've given the head the old standard head bob walking by, like, how's it going, what's up, but that's it. They say he's a hell of a guy.
Well, judging by the party scene in the pub, he looked like the kind of guy you and I would like to spend a few minutes with.
Yeah, I want to party with that dude.
All right, well, let's talk about your man. It's really been a tale of two seasons. Last year, more than $2 million made, 38 finish on the FedEx list. Is it hard, and I realize that there's some mitigating circumstances. I mean, Cookie got off to a late start this year because he became a father. But is there something to, even with someone as accomplished as Austin is, and even someone who's as experienced as a caddy as you are, is there something to playing against your own expectations as opposed to just playing golf?
I'm sure there was a lot of that, but really the 2 months off that he took for his kid was the killer of the season, in my opinion. And there's another thing. This week, watching Cookie back on top of his game, his ball striking has gotten right back. You know, when he won Sea Island, it was just, I mean, he had played good leading up to Sea Island, and I was so impressed with kid. But that week of Sea Island, it was ball striking like I'd never even seen, even out of Brian Gay. You know, and I saw Brian Gay win by 10. Cookie's ball striking was just immaculate for the whole week. I mean, he never hit a ball in the right rough the whole week.
I was going to say, look, the thing that knocked me out, and we talked about it, I think, the week after he won at Sea Island, I had never seen for 18 holes in my golf viewing lifetime someone eliminate a side of the golf course like he did in that round. And I don't even think you were aware of it until afterwards. He literally took that side out of play, period. Charlie, there was not going to be an issue.
It was 4 rounds. He never hit a ball in the right rough 4 rounds. Not the last round, 4 rounds. How about that?
It was unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
So you have that great year. You're coming into this season. Like you said, Austin became a father. No one's going to fault him for taking time off to be there
for the
Yeah, I mean, it's the right move. But it did sort of, it seemed like set you back a little bit, because the season up to this point has been spent with, okay, hey, we're finally making progress, and then we start missing cuts again. I mean, at the RSM, we finished 11th. We missed the cut the next week. We finished T9 at Valspar. We missed the next two cuts the next 2 weeks. It's just sort of been like that.
Yeah. You know, he missed 5 cuts his rookie year. So, I mean, I was getting ready to add it on an addition to my house this year. I was planning on all this money pouring in. But then we hit a wall. But you know what, Charlie, about when I mentioned that Sea Island, I was a teaching pro and a club pro for 100 years and giving 1 million golf lessons. I've always prided myself on keeping my guy on top of his stuff. You know, like when I was with Brian Gay, we went 5 seasons with 0 swing changes. And, it's a tribute to Brian, but I always felt like it was a tribute to me, too, staying on top of his ball position, checking his lines every day, and not letting him get off. And so I was so upset at myself when the season began and Cookie came back and his golf swing was off. I was so mad at myself for not knowing what was the difference, you know. And I had it on film. I had his swing on film for that week. And a couple of months ago, his teacher is the assistant pro at, I mean, the assistant coach. He's got two teachers, his old home pro who helps him a lot and is more of a mental coach than anything for Cookie. And his assistant, the assistant coach at Arkansas, works with his golf swing the most. And he found where Cookie was getting the club after he got back just past waist high. He was getting the club behind it. And Cookie had this little circle top of his backswing. And the club, it would circle up before it would come back down. So it was throwing the momentum of the shaft out when he was heading down. And I didn't find it. It was just, you know, it's just 6 inches or so of the difference in the shaft pitch. And I didn't see it. And I was so pissed off at myself for not seeing that. And you know, I'm not going to let it happen to us again. I got it on film again now, and I'm fine with him going to his teacher, but we ain't going to need his teacher much now. I mean, because he is absolutely dialed in, and I'm going to keep him right where that coach put him. I'm going to make sure I don't see us getting off base now. And Cookie put that long putter in the bag. I'm expecting a huge finish to our season.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a second. Kip Henley, Austin Cook's caddy, is our guest taking Dead Aim. I always find it interesting when I hear stories about this, of the best in the business, the PGA Touring Pro, how they can get off just as easily as, you know, the recreational golfer, and it's usually something so minute. I know my son is a competitive amateur golfer, and when he gets off, he'll say, what do you see? And, I mean, I've been there every golf swing this kid's taken, it seems like, since he was, you know, 7 years old. And there are times that I can't spot it, and there's times that he can't spot it. Now, the guy who works with him, it's like within 5 minutes, he's able to go, oh, here it is. And you just want to kick yourself in the pants that, how did I miss that? How did I not see that? And it's interesting to me, you being a former, you know, club pro and teaching professional, it had to be doubly that way for you that you're like, God dang it, how'd I miss this?
Yeah, we tried. I went through three or four different fixes in that stretch that we were struggling, you know, to keep the club from circling on him. And I just didn't see that thing was tipped. It was, you know, more parallel to the ground once it got past waist high instead of standing the shaft up more. And then it could just go up and come right back down like it's on the hinge like it is right now. I mean, that thing goes up, sets, and comes like it's like it's on a hinge. It ain't turning, it ain't curling, it ain't doing nothing up there. Now it's rock solid. So I don't see the guy getting off for a while. So I'm not gonna let him get off as long as he keeps me.
Well, there you go, and he should keep you around. Looking at his summer, you know, again, we start off, we had a top 20 at the Schwab, a top 30 at the Memorial. You had to be feeling like, okay, all right, here we go. And then boom, 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 you mentioned the 5 missed cuts in a row. Then we got off, and I remember we swapped messages, got off to a great start at the John Deere. You know, you know, you shoot, what, 67, 60, or 60, 66 yeah. in the opening round. And yeah. then, you know, that's a golf course where you got to take it low at all times. What sort of, is this when y'all started to think about, okay, maybe we need to get a new look at the putter?
Yes, those weeks, that stretch through there. Now, we've been doing the putter 3 weeks now, but I think the John Deere was the first week with that putter, and he made all those birdies in the first round and the eagle with it. And I thought, all right, this is going to be the game changer. And his ball striking was still, you know, he's been working. He's been working this last 3 weeks. He's been putting in the time on the range, and it's just come together from his hard work. And, you know, the kid's just so dang talented. And the putter is his speed is as good as I've ever seen it with this long putter. You know, it's not long, it's the forearms.
Right, right.
Locked in like Cooch and Glover and those cats are doing.
Now, how long did he jack with that before y'all actually put it in play?
Listen, I've been trying to sneak it in his bag for a year now.
Really?
But I wouldn't say we got to putt with this because I didn't want to kill his confidence, you know, but I just knew he could be a little bit more consistent. And I would pick it up, stand in front of him, and hit some putts on the putting green occasionally, you know, and even once or twice, says, hey, just whack a putt with this, see how this feels. And he would say, I ain't using that. I don't like that. You know, he's old school. He's a traditional kind of player.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not using that. I don't want nothing to do with that. And it's okay. And then I think he just had a couple of really, really weak weeks putting, and we were like last in the field. And he really, I think he looked at it and thought, I can only go one direction. And he put it in his, he started hitting putts. And it's like he'd been doing it his whole life. He didn't change anything about his setup. It flowed right into his game. So I'm excited about that forearm putter.
Austin Cook's caddy, Kip Henley, is our guest taking Dead Aim. Great week this last week at the Barbersol Championship. We swapped messages on Saturday evening. I'm sitting there watching the back nine of moving day. And what's it like when your man is 9 under on moving day and gets boat raced by a couple of guys? What the hell was going on there?
Well, you know, it's not that he got boat raced by a couple of guys. He got boat raced by two guys that were ahead of us starting the day. That's impossible. I don't know, right? You're always, you know, even if you shoot 9 under on tour, you can get beat, but never are the guys in the lead. If you hang an 8 or 9 under them, never you're not going to make up ground. We lost stroke to two guys that were behind. We're in the next last group, and they both best us by one. It's mind-blowing. So I think they were both ahead of us to start that round. Pretty sure they were.
Yeah, I know that one of them shot 10 under, and one of them may have shot 11 under. I mean, it was crazy what went down.
Crazy. Yeah, it really was. But I knew Cookie was even though we got off to a slow start on Sunday, I just felt like, you know, golf's hard, and, you know, he might get ahead of himself or start thinking or putting pressure on himself, and he could crash and burn, but I just felt like he was hitting it too good, and his speed was too good on the greens just to not get going. And even though we were 1 over going up number 8, but then he hit a 5 iron. We hit a beautiful tee ball off 8, and then we had the 3 hour rain delay, or 4 hours, whatever it was, or 5 hours, whatever it was. And he went right back out there, and we had like 225-10 to a back pin, and he sat on that shot for 3 or 4 hours. However long. He comes out there and he knocks it 20 feet. You know, there's water left and there's some danger around there. And then he buried that putt, and God, that was huge. And he birdied 9. I go, uh-oh, we're fixing to win this golf term. You know, he's going to shoot him 30 over here. We're just going to run right by these cats. But then we stubbed our toe. I don't know if he got ahead of himself or he hit it in the middle of the green on 11 and had a really hard 2 putt and 3 putted it for par. That really took the momentum out of this day. So,
is there a trick to following up really low rounds? Because just looking at what you guys did at the Barbersol, you go 67, follow it with the 66, you go 63. I mean, you know, you shot, what, 270 in the last round, and you had to feel like you shot about 14 over. But just that, the mindset of following up a 67 with a 66 and a 66 with a 63 and what's going on in front of you, it's got to be incredible to just maintain that kind of focus.
Right. You know, I think it takes a special kind of person, and it has a lot to do with how you're raised and things and the course you grew up on and stuff, Charlie. And really, it's a mind, like, it was always easy for me. You know, I was always known for a guy who could really hang a low score on guys, you know. I would shoot lots of big numbers. I've played high performance. But I grew up on a golf course that was par 34 on the front side at this golf course where I grew up. So we would get hot. We'd shoot 29, you know. It happened all the time. So whenever I went to a golf tournament, I would get down 6 or 7 under on 9 holes, and I would just keep going. It didn't bother me. It was just a number, you know. And a lot of these cats go, oh, my gosh, I got a chance to shoot 30, and then they would just. So it's a little bit of that for me growing up. But more than anything, Charlie, it is the old, it's the same old thing. It's routine and mindset on how you're approaching each shot. If you can just, you know, see your golf shot and trust your golf swing and things like that. That's how you shoot the low numbers.
Do you think it helped that you came along on a 9-hole golf course that before you could really start thinking about, oh, man, I'm really on to something, you know, essentially the round was over. It was just 9 holes.
Yeah. I was shooting, like I said, we were shooting, it's par 70, so we would shoot 63, 62, like in the low balls and stuff. And so I got used to shooting super low numbers. So when I got in the golf tournament, I could go on down there. It didn't bother me one bit. And a lot of guys have this mental block about getting down in the, you know, the low 60s or the mid 60s, and they seem to put the brakes on. But Cookie's got that gear, man, where he can just, you know, that year at the Bob Hope when we had the league going, golly, I think he shot like 8 under, 9 under back-to-back rounds or something like that. So, and the year you won Sea Island, it was crazy too, you know?
Always love picking the brain of a professional caddy, and he's one of the best. Austin Cook's man and my life coach, Kip Henley. And up next, we put a bow on the 148th Open Championship with the man who anchored coverage on Sirius XM and PGA Tour Radio, Taylor Zarzer, as he takes dead aim at Shane Lowry's historic win. Presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. Taylor Zarzer is the anchor for major championship coverage on Sirius XM and PGA Tour Radio, and I got the chance to catch up with my old friend upon his return from Royal Portrush earlier this week. Taylor, I want to start with you the same way I started with our friend Ron Green Jr. with this question. Look, the Masters is special because Augusta National is so special. When you have the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach, it's special because Pebble Beach is so special. When you have the Open at St. Andrews, it's special because that's the home of golf. Not to disparage any other major or venue, but I really got the idea, and I don't know if it was because I fell in love with looking at the course or the vibe and the energy from the huge crowds, but I got the feeling that an Open Championship at Royal Portrush is special. Did you get that vibe as well being there?
There's no doubt I can confirm. It's a fact that it was special. I mean, a lot of that had to do with not being there in 68 years, but the passion for life and golf, and pints of Guinness that the Irish people have is just remarkable. I mean, they all become your best friend in 5 minutes, and you very quickly realize, I can't keep up with you guys. You guys are wonderful and so loving and friendly, but we can't run at your rate. We can do this for a week, but we can't do this for a lifetime, and they keep it going when we're gone. But, yeah, I mean, I think, 68 years between trips had a lot to do with that. Most people would tell you that you need to, if you're going to only check off one place on your bucket list in playing European golf, you need to try whatever you can to go to the home of golf, like you said, the old course of St. Andrews, because it's like going to Fenway. I mean, it's like going to the Rose Bowl in Pasadena.
Right.
It's, you know, it's nothing can match the historic sense that you get, feeling that you get when you're at the home of golf. But if you were going on a golf trip and you could only take one, I can tell you that there's, after doing both, that Ireland is filled with better golf courses and more spectacular beauty than any country in Europe, if not any country in the world. And so, yeah, I mean, you put all that together, and it did. It carried a lot of special significance, and the RNA, they must go back there within the next 6 or 7 years. Graham McDowell said, only concern is that we, and he's from Portrush, if we go back here every 10 years, it's going to lose a little bit of the juice. We need to come back a little quicker than that, and I agree with him. I know that as we're talking, the Ryder Cup just announced it's going to be over in the western part of Ireland in 2026, which will be fantastic. But I think they need another Open within the next 7 or 8 years, too.
Well, you know, there is precedence for this. The USGA held the U.S. Open for the first time in, 1999 at Pinehurst No. 2. They couldn't get back there fast enough. They were there in 05, and then they finished there just a couple of years ago in 10
point.
Or 11. So there's precedent for getting back to a great venue sooner and sooner. Taylor Zarzer is with Sirius XM and PGA Tour Radio, our guest taking Dead Aim. You mentioned how golf is in the culture there. I had this discussion with Oliver Horvitz a week or two ago, and we were talking about he spent 10 years caddying and living in St. Andrews. And, you know, full disclosure, I grew up in Texas. College football is in my DNA. You went to the University of Alabama. College football and football in general, it's part of our DNA. It's what we were raised on. What's it like to go to a country where the sport that you and I are very passionate about, the sport of golf, is as entrenched in people's DNA as, say, college football is in ours?
Yeah, I mean, well, Shane Lowry winning the Open is like being in New Orleans or Baton Rouge when LSU wins the national championship in college football. I mean, it really is that celebrated, and we're going to go on a week-long pub crawl in order to celebrate. That's how they react to it. It is. It's a huge part of who they are and what they do. And, you know, I think that all the people that are listening to us that are old enough to remember and watch the nightly news with Tom Brokaw or Dan Rather, or even before that with Walter Cronkite, and a part of that of their news of their nightly newscast was talking about the troubles in Ireland. I think we're all just kind of we're so moved, especially those of us that were fortunate enough to be there. We're so moved by the sense of unity that Ireland now has, and that I think there was some concern coming in if that would be the case. And as soon as Shane Lowry shot that remarkable 63 on Saturday, I think all of us realized, you know what? I think all the people there realized we're all the same. You know, we all come from the same place. We may be separated by this extremely small sign that says Northern Ireland once you leave Ireland and go into Northern Ireland. And part of them, you know, are using pounds and others are using euros, and part of them are in the UK and the other in the EU. But there's so many of those people who come from the same families that look the same, that talk the same, that act the same. And it was just really refreshing to see how a sport that they care so much about can unite them. I mean, honestly, big picture here, that's why I do what I do. The most fulfilling thing about what I do is allowing someone to forget about their differences or their stresses or their finances and just get lost in sports. And it was really amazing to see how many hundreds of thousands of Irish people got lost in watching one of their own win the Open.
You bring up that Saturday 63. You've been present on the grounds for a lot of really historic and great rounds of golf shot by various people in the last 10 years or so. And before that, watching on TV and going to events and being a fan and even being a player. Have you ever witnessed? This was something out of a Pressfield novel. I mean, it was a completely clean card on a court. It was unbelievable, the 63. Hollywood wouldn't have written it. It was magic.
Yeah, and I mean, I've seen some rounds in the mid '60s. Fleetwood went crazy at Shinnecock. Brandon Grace had the best round we've seen. I guess actually it's Brandon Grace. I'm trying to change his name three times. he shot 62 at Birkdale a couple of years ago, and all of those rounds were great, and yet none of them had, you know, Tommy Fleetwood's from England. He's not from Shinnecock, New York. He's not, or Southampton, New York. He's not being carried off of every green and by people he grew up with in an area of the world that he grew up in. You know, Grace is from South Africa. He's not from England. And that was the difference here, is that we're watching someone that has played that golf course countless times, that's won big tournaments on that golf course in the past, that drove from his house in Clara, just south of Dublin, to get to the golf course in order to shoot that 63. I mean, that's what made that, as you said, flawless card so different, is that he was doing it in, you know, basically in his backyard. None of us expected that. If you told me Shane Lowry is going to win the Open, contend and or win the Open, I wouldn't have been shocked by that, because he had shown some real signs in 2019. His golf game was back closer to where it was when
he blew it. I guess he would say he blew it, although I would argue DJ won it at Oakmont 3 years ago. His game was in a much better place than it had been in a long time. But to shoot a 63 and have, you know, you could argue the round of the year in golf so far, I don't think any of us were prepared for that.
Taylor Zarzur with SiriusXM and PGA Tour Radio is our guest taking Dead Aim. The Open Championship to me is the story of two men over 4 days. We've already mentioned the winner, Shane Lowry, over Saturday and Sunday. There's no question that the man of the hour on Thursday and Friday was Rory McIlroy. And I know you think the world of Rory. I think he's one of the, you know, as far as what we do for a living, there is nothing better than someone who is as candid and as open and at times as funny and self-deprecating as Rory McIlroy is. He's fantastic. And he's a generational player. I think more of Rory McIlroy as a man now than I did going into this, and I had no problem with him before. The way for him to open up the tournament, arguably the most important tournament of his life, with a snowman, and then to do what he did the rest of that round on Thursday, and just to basically lose the tournament, but to come back on Friday and to gut it out and to do what he did and to embrace who he was and his culture and his people, and to be as emotionally moved and honest with his emotions in the post-round interviews and presser, I just came away going, I think this is the moment where Rory McIlroy became a man in full.
Yeah, I think that this year especially, he has tried to mind trick himself into thinking that each major shouldn't carry more significance than any other tournament, and this major especially, he should try to treat it like it's another tournament. He tried to mind trick himself into believing that and tried to tell all of us that too. And it's obvious deep down that that wasn't the case for him. He cared deeply about this. That's why his nerves were as high as they've ever been on that first tee. Although I'll tell you, Charlie, standing on that first tee, having played that hole and standing on it four or five times last week, that is a really tight driving hole. There's a golf course here in Charlotte called Raintree that looks like white soldiers holding hands.
Yes.
That first hole is, I mean, you could put that hole at Raintree without any problem. There are white soldiers all over the place. And if you have demons like I do, that can be a little terrifying. So I just want to say it's not like he hit this remarkably bad shot. We saw a number of players. You saw what Holmes did there on Sunday. And Shane Lowry just about hit it out of bounds there too on Sunday. So he didn't hit an awful shot, but clearly he was feeling the nerves. Rory has become the world's. He's been so popular all over the world, and he's become kind of a global citizen with the way that he's handled himself. He is just as much a Floridian as Brooks Koepka or Justin Thomas or Ricky Fowler or Tiger Woods or anyone else that lives down there is. I mean, he's the most American of all the international players. And it's because people in this country love the guy. He's ingratiated himself to so many people. With that, there's been this argument that he's kind of lost a little bit of where he came from. And, you know, he is surrounded by the biggest managers in sport. He's changed management a couple of times to try to make sure that he is marketed properly all over the world. And again, that's come at a little bit of a cost where some people in Northern Ireland and throughout that area have wondered if he has forgotten a bit of who he was. I don't know that that's fair, but I think that that's been out there. And then on top of that, you know, his comments a few years ago about not knowing, you know, which country he would represent if he were to play in the Olympics, because of all that's gone on with the EU and with the UK in that area, I contributed to that. And I think that he was nervous about how he was going to be received. I don't think it could have gone any better. After all that happened on Thursday, for him to pour his heart out like that and battle, give everything he had in shooting that 65 on Friday, for all that emotion to come out of him, I think, like you said, I think all of us, even though we appreciate how much he tries to be great to everyone, I think we all appreciated that he was so good to the people of which he came from, and vice versa. So I think you're right. I think it's going to serve him well. And my hope is that we're going to see a little more emotion come out of Rory on the golf course moving forward. He never had that problem when he was winning majors, and he's been a little more measured in recent years, especially on the golf course. And I hope we see a little more of that passion, that Ryder Cup passion we've seen from Rory. I hope we see that happen throughout the year moving forward.
Get you out of here on this. Taylor Zarzur is with SiriusXM and PGA Tour Radio. He's our guest taking Dead Aim. You know as well as I do that professional golfers, if it is a perfectly sunny day, someone will complain that the sun is a little bit further in the east than they really appreciate it. They'll find something to complain about. I was stunned. Truly stunned. I did not hear one disparaging word. Not one. Not even about the white soldiers on number one. There was not one complaint that I saw aired about Royal Portrush. Was there any behind the scenes?
No. And that was what was so refreshing to me is, I want to say I'm critical of these guys, but the truth is you and I would be the same way, and most listeners would be the same way if we were out there too. We do that in all parts of our life. We pick. We always want things to be a little better than they are. Even though we're grateful for what we have, we always try to think, how can we make it better? I've been to every major in the last 6 years, and in each of those, I always like to walk the golf course on Tuesday and or Wednesday and just kind of bump into each group and walk a little bit with, if I know certain players a little better than others, walk with them for a few holes, just pick their brain on what they're feeling. And always you hear these greens are too slow, they're too fast, these are out of, they've lost the greens, this hole is a little silly. None of that. The unanimously, the reaction was, this is such a fair test of golf. You can't miss it on either side. You've got to hit the fairway. It's rewarding good shots. You especially have to hit a good shot into the green. And the greens are the perfect speed given how undulated the golf course is. The backdrop was spectacular. The condition of the course was great. It was. It's the only event I've been to in golf where that was the case. And if you go over there, you have to include it. I mean, Royal County Down is my favorite golf course in the world. Augusta National is the best experience I've ever had on a golf course, but Royal County Downs, I think, the best golf course in the world, which is closer to Belfast, and Royal Portrush, I think, is in the top 10.
And in Stewart over there as well, nearby?
Yeah, it is. And, you have hundreds of others. You could go over to Shannon, which has Ballybunion, and they have the golf course that just was awarded the 2026 Ryder Cup. That's over in the western part of Ireland. You could go to Dublin, and there's certainly some good golf courses in that area too. But Northern Ireland, for my money, is the best experience you could have. And Portrush, Charlie, the only disappointing part of this is that I know it was early in the morning. I know Tiger wasn't there on the weekend, and that the tournament wasn't in doubt in the last few hours. So I can understand why the ratings weren't high. But in terms of what the tournament gave us on property, it was an amazing experience, and I just can't say enough great things about the way that they pulled it off.
From SiriusXM and PGA Tour Radio, that's Taylor Zarzur. I'd also like to thank Austin Cook's caddy, Kip Henley, and from the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, Ron Green Jr., for their time and insight this week. A reminder, should you just be catching the last little bit of the show and wonder what all we've covered today, no worries. Subscribe to the Taking Dead Aim podcast at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, BePod Studios, Spotify, all the usual podcast outlets, and it will automatically download to the device of your choice. Additionally, a great source of constant golf updates is our Facebook page. Be sure to like us on Facebook. Just search Taking Dead Aim. This week, I'd like to end things a little differently. I always close the show by admonishing you to exhale, swing, and pose. And it occurred to me that I've never shared where this comes from. See, one of the great joys in my life right now is playing weekend golf with my son, Hogan. Golf is one of those games that all who play tend to overcomplicate. So when we're playing, I give Hogan just three things to remember before every shot. Exhale, swing, and pose. As we were playing in a tournament over the weekend and repeating this mantra over and over, it occurred to me that just as we golfers tend to overcomplicate the game we love, we all tend to overcomplicate life. just remember to exhale, swing, and pose. See, when you exhale, it releases all the tension in the body. It's impossible to make a good golf swing and resulting shot with tense muscles. And so it is in life. I can make an argument that everything you do, every decision, every thought you think, and resulting words you utter will all benefit greatly if you approach them without tension. Reminding Hogan to swing is to remind him not to hold back and to give it all he's got. No one's ever made a good golf shot who stopped before its completion and at half speed. I'm a big believer of setting a goal and then attacking it with full focus and passion. If two people have the same ambition, the one who is relentless in its pursuit is the one who will achieve it first. Chances are you've seen a golfer in the second after the shot's been made. The player seems frozen in time. The arms are across the body, the club is over the shoulder, the head facing forward, eyes gazing down the fairway. This is referred to as posing. Telling Hogan to pose is telling him to be sure to follow through on the shot and to finish with balance. It's a rare thing indeed for someone to hit a great golf shot after finishing the swing in a twisted, discombobulated mess. In business, teaching, parenting, whatever. If you follow through with what you start and are able to complete it with spiritual, emotional, and financial balance in your life, your chances for success are far greater than someone who does not. Look, you may be facing some big odds right now. Life tends to be that way. At some point, we're all there. Instead of playing what if or overanalyzing the situation, I want you to think of a 10-year-old boy standing on the first tee. And then just exhale, swing, and pose. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter at @CLT_golfguy. And I'll see you right here next week, Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.